I was driving my truck down Aravaca Road toward Tucson the other day. Well, before I got to the freeway, because you don't think on the freeway, but I, for some reason, I didn't have the radio on, and I was thinking at that time while I was driving of something that was kind of been in the back of my mind about something I'm going to write, and so I thought about it for quite a while. It wasn't that I said, I'm going to give some thought to this and see, but there it was, and that's when you think. But I think that usually we never really think of anything good when we're trying to think of something. I think how awful it must be to be at school and have to write something, and it would be the time I would never have anything to write. But I think that we know ourselves well enough to know what things are influences and what, you know, what things, whether it's even sounds or early morning. Some people, I always envy people who could sit at a coffee house and write while having coffee surrounded by cool people. I can't do that. I wouldn't even dream of it. I write all alone. I don't want to see anybody, and agonize, and you know, often I don't want to. I wouldn't recommend it to anybody as a way to write. I don't want to write something that isn't something I like. I was going to say good, but that isn't something I like. And keep going and keep writing and knowing that I can come back and change it. I have to like every line as I go, and which is a slow, ridiculous way to write. But it works for me because I can't make myself write a line and go on if I know it's terrible. So I please myself and write slowly. And I've never written with an outline. You know how we always make excuses for how we are. My excuse for not making outlines is that when you're writing, if it's a story or anything, and you want to write your outline first, but you're not, when you're doing an outline, you're certainly not in a highly creative moment of your life. So you do better to go ahead and write the part that you're feeling really strongly about and then see what happens. And that also keeps you interested because you're not working toward, which is, no, it's nothing you'd ever learn in school on how to write a short story or to do anything like that. You want to know, what I want to know is, the only thing I know in advance is the feeling that I want something to have. And I want to feel strongly. I want to work toward that feeling, but not necessarily know how I'm going to get it. You know, sometimes maybe I never do. And then I'll wish I'd made an outline. But it's just, I think we all have ways that work for us. And I've taught short story writing and different kinds of writing at workshops and things. And I always plead with people to forget everything they've ever been told about writing. Just if you feel it, write it. If you're a genius and it came out right the first time, all right. Otherwise, you can work on it. But work on it the way you want to. And even if I'm writing with kids in a school, I've horrified a lot of teachers by saying, you couldn't line me up in a desk and get me to sit there facing the front of the room and write a good poem. I'll say to kids, you know, if you feel like you'd feel a little more comfortable going sitting on the floor over here or go out behind the school, do it. Do what you need to do. If this is your only writing time, I would rather you get your creative writing time when you're home alone or home and you can do what you want. But if you're in school, so if you want to just go sit outside, I was doing one at some little tiny reservation in Nevada. I don't know where it was. And so they'd put us down at a boiler room for my creative writing workshop. I said, and you couldn't even see, and pipes on the ceiling. I said, I'm not going to write in here. Let's go outside. And one of the teachers came and said, you know, if you let them go out, they'll run away. And I said, well, if they go, I'm going too, but I'm trying to make it more interesting than that. And so we went outside, and we all gathered on the grass, and I talked about what I wanted them to write, and it was a personal thing for them. And I said, you know, just if you feel like you want to write right here, that's fine. If you'd like to move over on the other side of the lawn, sit down somewhere where nobody's bothering you and write, and then we'll all come back here together when we're through. And, I could see the teachers all looking out the windows of the school. They were so apprehensive that I'd really blown it this time. And they all came back and read what they'd written. They were proud to read it. It was beautiful, and it worked fine. But sometimes we have to do things like that just to remind people that it's creative and it's theirs, and that they're not following your instructions. You know, instructions come from you. But so I'm saying there's never any really a time that all by itself that you're not going to have a thought that might make you want to sit down and not do what you were supposed to achieve that day and do something else instead.
So writing comes out of an emotion.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It does. And sometimes an emotion that goes back to childhood or a place or and very often with me, from nature, we just be thankful for it. don't question why we have it. But it doesn't. I think that we're all different. So the what would just be fantastic little thing that I might even see on driving or see walking, or that would bring me back to something else with a strong personal collection, that might not for somebody else. So it just depends. But I think it's partly just getting to trust yourself. It doesn't matter if you can't think of somebody else who did exactly the same thing. You're still allowed to do it.
So the latest, one of the things you've written was Good Women Who
Love Good Women Who Love Bad Trucks. Well, I write a lot of essays that are just kind of for fun. Lots of essays. So essays can be short, very freeing, and they don't agonize over words the way you do in poetry. Well, sometimes they do. I just did an essay on ravens recently. I love ravens. I've done quite a few things, poems. I think the raven thing started out as a poem and ended up as an essay with a few lines of the poem in it. But I've written lots and lots of these little kind of goofy essays on what I do or don't do, and Good Women Who Love Bad Trucks it's fun to read in Aravaca because everybody knew the truck that I was writing about, how much I hated it. This is a truck I'd hoped someone would steal, and I left it on Gray Hill with the keys in it, hoping that someone would drive it to Mexico and would never be seen again. But instead, living in Aravaca, somebody came along and repaired it for me and drove it home, and I had to hear it driving up. You know, I was so disappointed. Still had to pretend to the man that I was appreciative that he fixed it for me. I do like, now I have a good truck and a newer truck, but I did write this about the truck, and people in Aravaca like this one because we like ones that are clearly Aravaca, where you know everybody and know the truck.
How long does it take to read that essay?
You know, a lot of things I'm going to read out I time, but I haven't timed that, probably 5 minutes or so.
Oh, would you care to read it?
Yeah.
Or is there one that you want to read? Another one?
No, this would be fine.
Okay.
Let me see if I can find my glasses. I'm going to an optometrist someday. Get some real
glasses.
Looks
like you're doing pretty well.
All right. This is Good Women Who Love Bad Trucks. A friend of mine once told me that my life would be really great if I could only learn to make better choices in men and trucks. So I said, how about I just get a man who can fix trucks? But he said, see, you tend to oversimplify, and that's a bad quality when you're dealing with old trucks. The truth is, I have a long history of bad relationships with old trucks, and it may well be because I chose them all for their good looks alone. My favorite was a red 1940-something Ford, which was so beautiful that I overlooked the fact that it did not have a motor. It sat in my driveway in Tucson for 3 years, motionless. I thought of it as urban sculpture and even washed it now and then and put luminarias on it for Christmas. I considered filling the bed with rich soil and growing exotic vegetables in it and calling it a truck garden. I liked it so well, I spent several weeks finding the exact pale sky blue paint that I still believe to be the perfect truck color. Besides, it goes well with the perfect truck name, which of course is Old Blue. I highly recommend owning a truck without a motor because you have no unreasonable expectations, such as that it might run for 3 weeks without breaking down. You expect absolutely nothing of it except to sit there looking sky blue, and there is very little chance of being disappointed. I was, however, disappointed in my next-door neighbor who always referred to it as a junk truck. She even brought over a newspaper clipping about a man who was being forced to move from his upscale Boston suburb because he had a brand new pickup in his driveway in defiance of the restrictions he had accepted when he bought the house. The clipping did not stay, but I like to think he drove away westward into the sunset, heading for a new life and a better class of neighbors. He may be among us even now. I countered with a clipping about an Arizona man who had just won the lottery. Asked what he intended to do first, he said, I guess I'll buy me a new truck. Makes you proud to live in Arizona, doesn't it? However, I would suggest that he is precisely the one who should own some beat-up, though incredibly interesting-looking old classic, because only a lottery winner can afford to keep it worth running. I speak from personal experience. My next-to-last truck, one with a motor, unfortunately, cost me thousands of dollars in repair, whereas no one in the world would pay me $400 for it. I know, because I put an ad in the paper which said, must sell 59 Chevy Apache long bed, make offer. I thought the blue flowered Mexican oilcloth stapled to the ceiling would be a good selling point, and so would the Virgin of Guadalupe gear shift knob. However, the men who came to see it were able to sense intuitively that it was a devil truck with a mean streak. They just kicked it a few times and left. Not fooled but for a moment by its carefree, good-natured appearance as I have been. It may seem naive, but I remember buying that truck, being full of trust and hope, picturing us roaring over steep, rough mountain roads together. Actually, we did roar over steep, rough mountain roads, but I usually had to walk back down and find somebody to tow the truck. I also remember picturing the radio blasting plaintive country songs, though it did not actually have a working radio, while I sang along. The odd thing was that in my enthusiasm, I was able to dip into some universal knowledge source and sing country songs I was not aware of having heard before. My best one was called Stand By Your Truck. It turned out to be quite appropriate considering how much time I spent doing exactly that. It should be noted, in my frontera town of Aravaca, Arizona, every living male has dedicated his life to the premise that old trucks should run forever. Not well, but forever. They perform miracles with duct tape and pliers and baling wire and WD-40, all items easily found on the floor of the cab. There are truck psychologists here, too. Some of them conveniently located in the cafe, drinking coffee. That's where I learned from eavesdropping at the next table that old trucks are set in their ways, have certain personal quirks and idiosyncrasies they have developed over the years, and that anybody with a grain of sense can figure out how to handle them. I suspected immediately that they were talking about me and that their sympathy was with the truck. But I pretended not to hear the discussion and left as soon as I could, filled with remorse and guilt. Even so, when the truck refused to go up Gray Hill the next day, I yearned to do it bodily harm and did not want to consider its personal quirks. I left a note under the windshield wiper, non-working, of course, which said, "I hate this truck." Actually, I took some faint pleasure in the fact that my writing was extremely concise, and even greater pleasure in my decision to leave the keys in the ignition, hoping that the truck would find its way into a nearby country south of us. Walking home down the dirt road, I found myself singing my newest song, Adios Camioneta. As you see, I have moved on from country songs to truck corridos, and this one is my favorite. But wouldn't you know, as soon as I was out of sight, someone came along and repaired it and drove it home for me. I tried to hide my disappointment when I heard it coming down the road, acting as though nothing had happened at all. This time, however, I'm not forgiving or forgetting. I'm going to start a new life and buy a new truck. Of course, I don't mean brand new. I mean one less than 20 years old. And I'm looking for a support group for good women who love bad trucks. If nothing else, I suppose we could at least swap trucks once in a while. Of course, in Aravaca, everybody knows the truck and the people who stopped and fixed it for me to get up the road and all of that. So,
is that the truck that burned?
No, no.
Different truck?
No, the truck that burned was a good truck.
It was a good truck.
That was the thing. Yeah, it was beautiful, new, good. I mean, new, 9 years old, 7 years old. It was a great truck. And that was just one strange, amazing thing that happened. So,
well, what happened?
I don't know what happened. I mean, I wish I did. I mean, and of course, if you're going to have a truck burn, and it would be the day that you put 25 hardback brand new books in it, you're supposed to take somewhere, all your laundry that you've just had done, and your address book, business letters you've finally written. I mean, everything you would not want to suddenly burn up was in the truck. So, yeah, I don't know. So then, you can't think what to do right away, and I'm stuck in Tucson with a burned up vehicle. So I ended up calling my cousin, who's a doctor in a Tucson, but just the dearest man in the world, and I told him I'd found it, that my truck had burned, that I'd found a truck that I could buy for $4,500, and that I had $500. And so he helped me out, and I'm hoping to get $4,000 sometime soon, doing possibly writing and possibly opening an envelope from royalties in it and pay him back. But he trusts me that long.
You said earlier that creativity can come out of emotion. It does come out.
Of course it does.
Emotion for you. And of course, about the truck, you're talking about perhaps anger. There are other emotions there. There's mad, sad, glad, and afraid.
Yeah, well, you know, the truck thing was just, it's you like to understand why something happened. And that, I just couldn't understand. I mean, I don't know why it happened. Usually I can figure out that actually I was at fault some way. But in this one, I haven't been able to figure that out. Or that somebody was at fault. Not always me, but, you know, that somebody did something. This truck, it seemed like I just wanted to burn. Yeah.
What books or poems or essays have come out of the feeling of happiness?
Most of them. Yeah. Most of mine have. I can't think of anything that didn't. And sometimes it's hard to distinguish for me whether it's happiness, but there's always a feeling of closeness, maybe, and connection to something. I've been writing a lot about ravens lately, and that's one of those things that you know. For instance, you know that ravens have a great joy in life, just the way coyotes do. So I've been enjoying watching ravens do all kind of things that are joyous, but at the same time, it's not just because they're joyous, but I think I feel a closeness. I don't want to just write stuff that's happy or funny. I want to write stuff that shows you that it all goes together. I think we have, we do probably, most of us share in that. Even if we're part of our emotion is spent on being sympathetic, either to people or animals or place or something. There are all kind of emotions which aren't joyous, but are part of what we need to be whole. And I don't think we usually know at the time, maybe what it is. I don't question things like that.
Have any of your writings come out of the feeling of sadness?
Probably. Well, a lot of poems, probably some poems have. But it isn't, it is never, probably not a hopeless sadness. But just that if we care about things, if we love things, we're going to feel some sadness and the changes that happen in either creatures or places or people or whatever it is. We want to have probably a broader range of emotion than we did when we were 10 years old, and I thought I was at the top of it when I was 10.
And how about the emotion of fear?
I don't have much of that. I think I'm too stupid to. I mean, I know it exists, and I have it sometime, but it's nothing that hangs on with me. I'm hardly aware of it. Maybe I call it something else, but I don't think so. I think I just, I don't, that's something I don't have.
I would agree with you, the way you live your life. Fearless.
I just, but many people would probably say non-thinking or stupid or, and that's all right too. I mean, it may be. It's all in how you look at it. But why not?
Yeah, I certainly would not say stupid or non-thinking. There's clearly a lot, much intelligence in what you do.
Well, thank you. I don't know. I think that there are a lot of risks worth taking, and so sometimes we go into something knowing that if you're basically optimistic, you always think you're going to succeed, but at the same time, then you'll say, "Oh well, it was worth trying."
Some people feel that, let's say, a rock is just a rock, a piece of inert matter. Do you feel that's the case?
Oh, well, no, I sure don't. I think that everything, of course, one reason that there are 7 million rocks piled up outside my house and another 200 inside is because I happen to pick up beautiful rocks and also interesting ones and old family ones that a lot of my father had. Land itself and landscape, but I particularly love the kind of wild places. I sometimes I'm places where the hills, and it's beautiful, and I know it's beautiful, but it's a little too soft and too comfortable or something. I don't know. I want more dramatic, nice, wild skies. And I mean, I usually I'm amazed at just even here where presumably I know a few miles around me in all directions, but I'll be amazed at something that I see just maybe from a different direction or a different shadows or different sounds. And I think we do. We're able to. I don't want to sound too esoteric about it, but I think that we can know land around us, of course, and as well as we know ourselves or people or anything else. And at the same time, just when we think that, we'll see it in a way we've never seen it before. And that's one of the interesting things about this kind of landscape. But I've always lived where it was pretty interesting. And I know as a little tiny child in South Texas, there was one place around me which was probably kind of an eroded, washed out, rocky riverbed, or it wasn't anything too interesting or to most people, but to me, but it was high enough that as a child, the sides of it were over my head, but barely. So it was just a little place, but it went for a long way. And I called that place because not that I was bilingual at the time, but there were a lot of Spanish speakers around me, and I called this place Grande World. And I still remember exactly how it felt to be there, because it was like exploring a brand new earth, because it wasn't what I saw every day. So right away I learned that, that's an interesting thing to do and a way to feel. And I still see places that I just yearn not to see driving by, but to be there. That's one reason I'm a very slow traveler and often get out and say, oh, I'll walk over to that sand dune, or I'll just to see this little hill. And luckily, I come from a family of people who don't think that's strange at all, and usually I'll do it, which means for slow trips, but interesting ones.